So, good morning, Kabe. I first got started in education as a high school history teacher, and though that was many decades ago, I still look to history for its lessons, and I still believe that if we don't heed the lessons of history, that we will be doomed to repeat it. So I decided that I would take you this morning on a journey through some of the history of English learner and bilingual programs up to this moment, this very crucial, pivotal, high-stakes moment when the Common Core is rolling out, and think about what is it we really need to know in order to navigate this era. And along with that journey, I'm going to lead us up to an announcement of a very exciting new initiative that we're launching today. So my story really begins, of course, back in 1974 with the Lauvie-Nichols Supreme Court decision, where the highest court in the nation ruled that schools had an affirmative obligation to provide those targeted, specific services English learners need in order to make real the promise of equal educational opportunity. And that landmark civil rights decision and the Bilingual Education Act that followed it set off these decades of roller coaster efforts to really build our field, to build our understanding of English learner needs, to build programs, to build the research that we really needed to make that promise real. And all along that journey, it was riddled with politics, because the education of English learners is so inextricably linked to larger societal battles over things like immigration and demographic change and civil rights. And those of us in California, in particular, felt that very mightily in the 90s, when we had we were in the midst of a growing and virulent English-only movement that took the form of local resolutions for English-only and our Prop 227 anti-bilingual education initiative. And that initiative really caught the bilingual education field by surprise. We didn't have our research together. We didn't have clarity about message. We didn't have an organization to fight back. We were really, really unprepared, and it was a brutal, difficult, hard time. Well, in this decade now, with the turn of the 21st century, some of those battle lines have softened somewhat. But we're still living with the anti-bilingual beliefs and with the real restrictions that are encoded in Prop 227. And in a lot of our communities and a lot of our districts, in fact, we're still feeling the impact of those fissures and those political fights. And that's the ground on which the newest school reform, the Common Core, is rolling out. Now, the truth is we don't really have a very good track record in this country of school reforms that deliver for English learners. In fact, instead, we have this whole litany of year after year after year, new reforms coming down the pike that promise a lot, that sound like really good, solid ideas, and we put our best foot forward, and we jump right in, and we work hard, and millions of dollars get spent on new materials and professional development, and then we find years down the road, whoops, English learners left behind again. Once again, with the gap still untouched. And so I think it's really important that we think about why is this happening and what do we need to do so it doesn't happen again. I think of it in terms of a set of conditions that I just call the lacks. The first is the lack of awareness that English learners are even here, that they're in our classrooms, in our schools, and the magnitude, the degree to which they are so significantly a population in our schools and in our state. And if you don't have that awareness, action is not going to follow. The second is the lack of data, the lack of monitoring and valid, reliable ways to know what are English learners learning, what aren't they learning, and things that would trigger us into real meaningful supports and interventions. The third is the lack of understanding of their needs, the lack of getting it, that when you don't have the language of instruction, you really are precluded from real meaningful comprehension and engagement. And along with that lack of understanding is a lack of understanding of linguistics, and along with that is the powerful role that home language plays. When people do not understand that, then it, to them it just seems like bilingual education, what does that have to do with our real task of teaching English? Then there's the lack of knowledge and skills, just the know-how, the strategies for what is it we have to do to meet the needs of students. Then there's the lack of resources that go into building capacity to deliver those strategies, so the professional development, the meaningful materials, and that's, of course, linked to the lack of will for doing anything for those kids, and the lack of belief that they can do it anyway. And in fact, perhaps those failures are just their own fault. So, those lacks were still in place when back in 2001, No Child Left Behind hit. And I think No Child Left Behind is a really important experience for us to look at in terms of what happened with English learners under that reform. It was the turn of a new century, and I was excited. I thought there was a lot of hope and promise in No Child Left Behind. I mean, for goodness sakes, even its name says, Leave No Child Behind. So I assumed maybe that means English learners too. But also, significantly, in its design, it was designed to address that lack of awareness and lack of data, right? They defined English learners as a significant subgroup to be paid attention to and to be monitored. But the problem was that all of those other lacks were still in place. And so people did not have the expertise about what the needs of English learners were, didn't know what to do to really address needs. And No Child Left Behind was also being implemented hot on the heels of 227, hot on the heels and still in the grips of an English-only movement. And so the accountability system that was designed under No Child Left Behind was an English-only accountability system that didn't measure what students were really knowing and that penalized particularly schools with large numbers of English learners because by definition, they're not proficient in English. That's what it means to be an English learner, right? And so between 227 and this English-only accountability system, we found the number of children getting primary language instruction plummeted precipitously down to now only about 5%. Of the children in the state get any kind of home language instruction or support. So here was our state, all geared up to address the subgroup, English learners, and to really try to meet their needs, but without one of the things that research has made very clear makes a huge difference for them, which is leveraging the power of the home language. So politics and ignorance banished consideration of bilingual education. And because by definition an English learner is not proficient in English, those schools with large numbers of English learners were the first to be put into corrective action and into program improvement. And that system was frankly led by people that did not have that expertise on English learners, did not have the research base about what really meets their needs. And so there were some disastrous consequences, unintended, but nonetheless disastrous. We saw a drastically narrowed curriculum. So all those minutes in language and arts and math pushing out science, social studies, the arts. We saw an insistence on fidelity to core programs that weren't really adequately designed for English learners. So English learners, we were scrambling with preview and review to try to catch up, but in fact most of their time was in curriculum not designed for them. The gap remained stubbornly in place. So I want you to just think for a minute. Are these conditions that you recognize that maybe are happening in schools you know, of that narrowed curriculum, that fidelity to programs that weren't really adequate for English learners, many, many minutes in those programs, the gap remaining the same, primary language programs, bilingual programs getting watered down, pushed back, disappearing? Is that part of the reality that you knew through the No Child Left Behind years? Well, we learned as a state the hard way, again, that reforms that are not designed to address the needs of English learners, that are not designed with the expertise and research about English learners at the heart, are going to fail. And all over California, we saw an unacceptably large numbers of English learners were stalled in making progress toward English proficiency and academic engagement. Up and down the state, secondary schools were discovering, grades 6 through 12, this group, long-term English learners, students who were stalled out at that basic oral language proficiency they need for social reasons, without the English they need for real academic engagement and success, unable to be redesignated, losing their home language in the process of becoming English speakers and struggling academically. And while their presence was really obvious in high schools where people used terms like ESL lifers to refer to them, it was not so obvious way back in the elementary schools, which is where it begins, because we know it starts the day English learners enter our schools with the current patterns, the current conditions, and our current approaches that we are setting students off for this journey of becoming long-term English learners. We know that of about the 185,000 English learners that enter kindergarten each year in California, about half of them are starting off on a journey of becoming long-term English learners, struggling academically, becoming farther and further and behind, despite starting school with that five-year-old brain that's wired for language development, despite carrying on their shoulders the dreams of their communities and their families that they're going to be the generation to make it in this country, despite teachers working really, really, really hard to try to meet the needs of the students, something goes drastically wrong. And it happens because of those lacks I mentioned. Lack of strategies for meeting their needs. Lack of programs that are really consistent and coherent and designed for English learners. That narrowed curriculum that leaves so many of them with these big academic gaps, so they hit middle school and high school, never really having had science, never really having had social studies. So it should be no surprise that there's such a large dropout. It should be no surprise that we have so many stalled out long-term English learners. Well, when the National Literacy Panel on Language Minority Children and Youth released their amazing meta-analysis of all the research that had been done on literacy and this population of students, it offered us a real important lens for looking at the practices in schools and saying, is this research-based? Is this research-based? What does research really tell us should be happening? And what we saw was that what was in place was not at all in sync with the research. The report really reaffirmed the role of home language, and it pushed back against that sense that bilingual education programs don't work, with findings that bilingual programs produce equal or better results from English-only programs with the added benefit of literacy in two or more languages. And yet the prevalent belief on the ground was still home language holds them back, or we can't take time, precious time, for the home language, or bilingual programs really don't work anyway. The report emphasized the importance of oral language as the foundation for literacy, but it also pointed out that oral language instruction was largely disappearing from literacy instruction under the pressures of an accountability system that was only looking at reading and writing. And the report pointed out the importance of scaffolding and SDI strategies and the fact that English learners really do need something more than other students in order to comprehend and gain access to the curriculum. And yet policy and practices still persisted in the belief that just good standards-based teaching works for everybody and the same good strategies work for everyone and the same core programs should work for everyone. And the National Literacy Panel also pointed out the role of content knowledge, background knowledge, needing to know that science and the social studies is the basis for language and literacy, despite the fact that in our schools what was happening was the belief that the more English, the better. If they're not doing well in English, it doesn't matter if we shove out the rest of the curriculum. Let's just put them in more minutes of English and English support and English intervention. So something was really, really out of sync. And that's what people were believing through the No Child Left Behind era. That's what policy reflected. And that's what people still believe. And that's the ground on which the Common Core is rolling out. So it was really great to have that research. But on the ground, things were moving in the other direction. And for me, I was sitting there with all the sense of urgency from the long-term English learner research, of feeling like we've got to undo this, we've got to undo what's happening. I was sitting there with all of the despair from what I was seeing as the result of No Child Left Behind on English learners. I was sitting there with all the sense of possibility that the new English learner research was really giving us. And I saw the Common Core coming, and that's what led to a piece of work that's been the last 6 years of my life. I wanted to try to represent, to demonstrate what the Common Core could look like with English learners really at its heart, with the English learner research really being enacted in tandem with the Common Core, and that's what set me out to build on those three foundations and to start my SEAL program, the Sobrato Early Academic Literacy program. Now, SEAL is designed, it's a pre-K 3 program that was designed to set an early foundation, really solid, of language and high levels of cognition and wonderful expressiveness and access to the full core. And it was articulated pre-K through 3. It was meant to reach for a vision not just of grade level mastery, but also confident, engaged, joyous, joyful learners who are biliterate whenever possible. And it implements the Common Core standards. Well, the Common Core standards, because they represent a more rigorous understanding of the language that we need to succeed academically, meant that we had to reprogram ourselves to reach on a different tangent, to reach on a different trajectory, to reach that level of rigor. And so SEAL sought to do that. And the Common Core also, for the first time, put out to the world an understanding that many of us in the English learner world had had, which is that language develops in and through content, that we learn language by using it to talk about the world, to talk about science, to engage in social studies. And the Common Core really recognized that, and so I thought this was a fantastic opportunity for some real congruence. The Common Core also focuses on oral language for the first time, speaking and listening standards for all kids. It focuses on collaboration and engagement. So the Common Core could be the avenue to realize a lot of our dreams for English learners. And SEAL attempted to reflect that by creating standards-based thematic units, rich language across the whole day through social studies and science, in classrooms that are alive with language, active, engaged children, where ELD is connected to all of that content. It's not this separate, dissembled curriculum. And in SEAL classrooms, what you see are even preschoolers learning high-level, complex vocabulary, using words like germination if they're talking about plants, using words like metamorphosis if they're learning about butterflies, the scientific language, the high-level language, the conceptual language. Right from the start, they're engaged in structured oral interactions and instructional conversations because talking about and listening to others is the way to really make your own thinking transparent, to really develop language, and to build and construct knowledge together. They learn to read, of course. Yay, yay, somebody just... They learn to read. Absolutely, but they're also learning to love books with active engagement and interactive dialogic read-alouds, narrative retells, making it their own, author studies, many opportunities for engagement with text of all kinds, including informational text and wonderful literature. Teachers regularly check for comprehension because and adapt their instruction because in a SEAL classroom, no child is going to be left behind because somebody didn't notice that they weren't comprehending. SEAL classrooms, thank you, are rich with visuals to aid comprehension, photographs, posters, all kinds of things to make it real, teachers' illustrations, class-developed illustrations, to reflect learning, to entice curiosity, and graphic organizers to help shape conceptual thinking. Every thematic unit has a corresponding dramatic play area linked to the theme, because young children learn through play. So if they're studying insects, it's going to be an entomologist lab. If they're studying the human body, it's going to be a cardiologist lab. Children write daily, beginning with dictation in preschool, seeing their words turn into print. They do writer's workshop, editing together, writing together, collaborative writing. They learn and practice collaboration and teamwork as a skill in and of itself that's so important in the 21st century, but also because language develops through that kind of interaction as thought develops through it. The arts are a definite part of SEAL classrooms because they're such a crucial area of human expression, and because also there's a language to talk about art, to engage in art, to appreciate art. And we bring their world to the classroom. Tangible, real things they can touch, learn about, bring that background knowledge that they so need, the realia that bolsters comprehension, builds curiosity, invites investigation. And we invite their world into the classroom, their parents, their families, their culture, their language, and all of this whenever possible, at least in those classrooms where we can have the biliteracy programs, they're doing it in two languages, and our schools celebrate bilingualism and biliteracy. So SEAL was designed to address every one of those lacks that I mentioned earlier, to really make English learners front and center, to be sure that the professional development is in place to build capacity, to have the assessments in place, to build the will, the leadership focus on English learners. This is Common Core implementation. It is next generation science implementation. It is the prevention of long-term English learners, and it is built on the foundation of English learner research. And it works. We piloted this. Thank you. We piloted this in several districts and sites with their feeder preschools. Catherine Lindholm Leary brought her wonderful expertise in dual language education to bear and doing a longitudinal analysis following the little ones from preschool all the way up to third grade. And you should know before I share a teeny bit of the data with you that the population in our schools actually are not like the comparison students. They are much more heavily Hispanic, English learner populated schools. Parent education levels are much lower than state and district comparisons. Socioeconomic status is much lower. Those are things usually associated with being at academic risk, and we wanted to set out to erase those factors as factors affecting academics and to close the achievement gap with English-only students by third grade. So here's just a little taste of the findings. Parent literacy practices equal to those of college-educated parents nationwide. Children in our classes began preschool with much lower levels of language, even in their home language, than the comparison groups, made significant progress, statistically significant progress, every single year in cognition, in language, etc. On CELT, even though 60% of our kids are in bilingual instruction, with the preponderance of their day in Spanish instruction, we found that our kids outpaced the comparison on CELT. If they were a cohort in and of themselves, they would have met all accountability targets by kindergarten, first, second grade on CELT. And we have children that are leaping two levels on CELT because of the rigor of language and the intensity and richness of language and how that transfers from primary language to English. They outpaced the state, they outpaced the districts, which are students that are in English-only instruction. By second grade, the first CSTs that they take on English language arts, you can see that they are again outpacing the district and state comparisons. Now, while we work in both SEI English instructed classrooms as well as bilingual classrooms, and we do all of the same language in rich education, our SEI classrooms do in fact outpace the comparisons, but those in the bilingual and dual language classrooms far outscore those in the SEI classrooms on all measures of English, and they have their home language as well. What we see is a level of language loss in those in home language for those in the SEI programs as compared to the proficiency in home language and proficiency in English we're seeing in the bilingual programs. And we found what many other researchers have found, that the level of rigor and fluency in Spanish is correlated with the level of fluency and proficiency in English. So we were really, really happy, right? We had great results. And in fact, what we found is the same thing that the National Literacy Panel found, that Ginger and Wayne Collier found, that Thomas find, that Catherine Lindholm Leary has found. Why do we have to keep doing this research over and over again to find the same thing? It works. And if I were standing here in any other year, this actually might be the end of my presentation. I could let you go early and I could just say, you know, we did this demonstration project, we got great results, we showed how the Common Core can work for English learners, and that biliteracy is a powerful pathway to the Common Core, and that would be the end of it. Hooray. But you know what? This is not an ordinary year. And all around us, there's a need for us to heed some lessons from the No Child Left Behind era, because the Common Core is everywhere, every journal, every conference, every place we go. Common Core, Common Core, Common Core, Common Core. Because it's a huge task, because it is such a huge change for all of us, it is on our plates. But remember, those lacks, they're still there. They are still in place. Nothing has changed that picture. Even with our older standards, those beliefs and the ways of doing things weren't getting kids to the level of rigor that the old standards represented. And now we have the Common Core with much greater rigor. And still, we haven't been able to get kids where we need them to be in the old standards. So really, with the new Common Core rigor, who are we kidding? And I'm going to say it really simply. I believe that Common Core standards implementation without attention to building a solid foundation of understanding of English learners and implementation of English learner research is going to fail, and it, as with all other previous reforms, is going to leave our English learners behind. So, now, the Common Core standards are just standards. They don't say what you have to do to get different populations to meet those standards. But the intention was that the states would each develop their own English language proficiency standards that would show the pathway for English learners into the Common Core. And in California, it was two full years after the Common Core had been adopted and began to roll out before our ELD standards hit the streets. And that was actually a fast track compared to other states. But it was 2 years in which people was already building understanding of the Common Core and beginning to build their units and talking about the Common Core, and the whole kind of infrastructure, professional development about the Common Core got up and running. And when the ELD standards were released, they were as different from the old ELD approach as the Common Core was from prior language arts, and they were going to require the same level of building understanding, coming to know the standards, building some new professional development around it as the Common Core had. They moved us from this notion of this relegated separate ELD as a whole separate curriculum to the notion, again, like the Common Core, that language happens in and across everything, so ELD needs to be happening in and across our other academic subjects, in addition to separate ELD. So it's this wonderful, robust understanding of language. It really is. But the implications are pretty huge. Think about it. All teachers using the ELD standards in addition to their content standards to plan content instruction, collaboration between ELD and other content to really figure out what content-based ELD needs to be, all teachers having strategies to use throughout all curriculum that really address these ELD standards. How can that happen without the investment of professional development and time and collaboration and leadership to really make it happen? And frankly, by the time the ELD standards hit the streets, everybody was already overwhelmed, all their time taken up, all of their professional development days devoted to the Common Core. They were already on a trajectory. The train had left the station. And the question really is, did we get to the party too late? So I work all over the state, and here's some of what I hear, and I want you to think, is this the sound of English learners being left behind? From a principal, the new ELD standards, we know they're important for teachers to get acquainted with, but you know, there's so much on our agendas now, we just don't see when it can happen. Maybe we could schedule something, maybe 20 minutes at a faculty meeting, just so teachers know there's new standards. From a district curriculum and instruction person, our teachers are just wrapping their heads around the new Common Core units we've created. We can't add to their overwhelm. We just can't ask that of them. From a district English learner coordinator, it's the humanities folks in our district who've taken on the Common Core work, and all of our PD's D-days are already booked by them. And you know what? They don't really listen to the English learner office in our district. So we could hold a voluntary after-school or Saturday session on the new ELD standards for interested teachers, but I don't think anything else is possible. These are real. I just want you to know these are real. From a principal, we're using Ethel as our professional development consultant on the Common Core. She's doing great work with teachers. They really love her. She's doing these generic strategies that work for all students. And she says that that incorporates the English learners. So no, she doesn't take time for the ELD standard. She thinks that'll just deflect the teachers. Or consider this. Of people that come to visit or hear about my SEAL program, they come and they say, Lori, this is amazing. I would love to be able to do this in my school or my district, but we don't really have bilingual teachers anymore. Or my board would never accept a bilingual program. Or our English learner parents just want English programs. We can't make them enroll in bilingual. Those are the sounds of English learners being left behind, as is the look of a state that's moving in the direction of having no primary language assessments and going again to an accountability system that most likely will be an English-only accountability system, once again penalizing dual language and bilingual programs. We are definitely headed that way. So, I'm worried. And I'm not just worried, I'm actually really upset, because I see the Common Core leaving English learners behind, and that's juxtaposed with seeing my SEAL classrooms, where I see the joy, the confidence, the depth, the rigor, the relevance of the instruction that could be happening for English learners statewide. And the juxtaposition gives me serious pause, and having lived through too many reforms that left English learners behind makes me angry. And so when I named my talk, Not Again, I didn't mean it as in, not again, you know, like, oh, gee, look what's happening, but as in, not again, with determination. We cannot let the Common Core era be one that leaves English learners again, not again, and that means we have to counter all of those lacks. We have to clean this up. We have to address it. We have to remember that the failures of the past have repeatedly been on this kind, the ground of the lacks, and we have to say the Common Core will not move forward without serious attention to English learners. We have to know the research. We have to be articulate and be able to be absolutely firm that implementation without attention to the needs of English learners cannot happen, and that includes attention to their home language. We have to insist on adequate resources being devoted, the professional development, the materials, the collaboration time it's going to take to make this real for English learners. And that means every one of us has to go and take a good, serious look at the local control accountability plans being developed in our districts and say, where is the attention to English learners? Where are bilingual programs as a pathway to the Common Core? The local control funding formula was intended to improve and increase services for English learners. We have extra money to do that. Let's spend it where the research tells us we're going to get the biggest bang for our buck. And then we just have to be really firm. This cannot happen again. Just as the Mendez family and other Mexican-American families said many years ago, we will not let our children be relegated to inferior, racially segregated schools, and fought all the way to the state Supreme Court to bring down racial segregation in California schools. Just as Chinese-American families said in San Francisco in what resulted in our famous Lau v. Nichols decision, we will not let our children's education be sold away because they do not yet know English. We need our schools to deliver for our English learners. So too, we have to be the voices now that say the Common Core will not be another nail in the coffin of English learner education. It will deliver on its promise this time, the considerable promise of the Common Core made real for our English learners, because we need them, articulate, bright, educated young people. And that means they need that excellent education, and we need to provide an education that brings them the skills of biliteracy. And that means being absolutely bold about biliteracy. We don't have to be apologetic. The research is so strong. The stakes for our kids are so high. This is not just a matter of equal educational opportunity, as important as that is. This is a human rights issue, their right to their home language and to an education that embraces and utilizes their home language as the powerful force it can be in their lives. So everywhere we go, get biliteracy back on the table as part and parcel of the Common Core, including saying, hey, you know what? What's this vision of career and college readiness in the 21st century? Isn't the Common Core a little weak on the fact that it should include biliteracy as a career and college readiness goal? That's right. And that can only happen if we have the programs that are going to lead to it. And so I'm thrilled to be able to be up here on behalf of Californians Together and CABE to announce the launch of a new California campaign for biliteracy. Because You know, over the last 15 years, we've seen growth of dual language programs here and there and here and there, and that's great that people are kind of getting that dual language programs work. And we've got the amassing of research that's irrefutable about the brain benefits, the social benefits, the economic benefits, and the needs for people with biliteracy skills. And we've had more and more districts signing on to the seal of biliteracy. And 2 years ago, California became that first state in the union to have a state seal of biliteracy for graduating seniors. And now other states have followed suit, with New York, Texas, New Mexico, Illinois, Washington, and Florida, Massachusetts, and Maryland poised to do so as well. So that's fantastic. And we have in the new ELA-ELD framework talk about the importance of biliteracy. And we have Torlakson in his transition documents when he became state superintendent saying that biliteracy was important. So something is shifting. But we have to say, it's not just about that end goal of biliteracy. Where are the programs that are going to get kids there? And that's right. Where are those programs? And that question gave rise to the California Campaign for Biliteracy. This is about saying we need those programs. This is the place, California. This is the time to do it. We're going to build district by district, districts that have comprehensive, accessible, coherent pathways articulated all the way pre-K through high school that enable every student in every district to have access to a pathway to biliteracy. So it's a big dream, but instead of importing English-only ideology as we did in the 1990s to the rest of the nation, we intend to build this movement and to import this nationwide, to really be a vision-based movement. So here are the components. A, it's about supporting districts, giving them guidance, giving them direction for what does it mean to build these comprehensive pathways, these accessible, equitable pathways to biliteracy for every student with multiple entry points so that they all have an opportunity to get there. What does that look like and how do we do it? The campaign is designed also to recognize those districts that have done so, that are models for the rest of us, and to say, hooray for your leadership and leading the way for all of us. And so actually, tomorrow at the Seal of Biliteracy reception, two districts are going to be the first to get the Multiple Pathways to Biliteracy Award in the state, San Francisco Unified and Glendale Unified. So, woo! So if you see people from those districts, give them a pat on the back. They are really, really leading the way. And work so that your district in the future can get one of these awards. So that's part of the work, but the other work is supporting a move legislatively. Now, we believe if we get enough districts building these programs and demonstrating how amazing it is, that we can move the legislature in the state to also do so. But we're working legislatively now instead of just waiting for that. So there are the two bills you've already heard about, and I want everybody to reach into their bags, pull out their letters, be sure you sign them. The first one is that Lara bill, Senate Bill 1174, English Learner Education, which would put on the ballot in 2016 an initiative to repeal 227. Now, that's really exciting to all of us, but think about it. Gearing up for 2 years from now for another big public fight over bilingual education. And remember those lacks. We've got a couple years to clean up our act, to build strong bilingual programs, to amass your research, to build public understanding of the bilingual programs and why they're so important, to showcase our biliteracy, our biliterate students, to know the research and be able to quote it. We have to be prepared, and we need the organization. So those of you who are not yet members of CABE, now's the time to sign up. We're going to need our organizations over these 2 years. And the second bill is the Bloom Bill, which is our Multiple Pathways to Biliteracy, putting that recognition into state laws. So these districts are not just getting recognition from us, but they're getting it from the state in the same way there's a state seal of biliteracy. So if you believe in that vision of multilingualism, if you want to see dual language and biliteracy opportunities for all students in every district throughout the state, please sign those letters, come to the Californians Together workshop right after this on the campaign, go to the Californians Together booth, get your buttons, pick up the publication about the campaign, learn more about it, and see what you can do to bring your district along so that we all together can create out of this Common Core era, an era that's really focused on college and career readiness for the 21st century, for all of our students, an appropriate vision of what education must be, and for all of our students, schooling that'll end those devastating patterns of English learners being left behind, and give us instead schools that truly prepare all of our students for this crazy, wonderful world they're inheriting. Thank you very much.